Welcome to Ceri Reads. I am so happy that you decided to stop by here. If you have not noticed, the intro is a little bit different. You did not hear my beautiful voice starting out. I am working with a new platform, and let me tell you, it is giving me the blues, okay? I worked with it last week. It gave me the blues last week, but I pressed through. But this week, I was just like, you know what? I have to find another way, because if I don't find another way, they're going to be problems. They're going to be problems if I don't find another way. So hopefully this is the other way. Okay. All right. So I have a really cool show planned out today. I am going to do the best I can to stay within the 22 minute range. Now, I will tell you I'm a little annoyed because I spent an entire 30 plus minutes trying to film this thing, or I'm sorry, to record this thing, and it was just kind of trash, and I was like, oh, it's upsetting. So I'm going to try to stay within the 22 minute range because I know that our attention spans are very short. Mine is definitely short. So let's get going. Let's warm up with a news story. And today's news story revolves around the Shenandoah County School Board in Virginia, who voted to restore the names of Confederate generals Thomas Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, and Turner Ashby to two local schools. Now, the controversial reversal comes nearly 4 years after the names were changed. For those who don't know and are wondering what happened 4 years ago to make the names change. Well, 4 years ago, an officer in Minnesota knelt on a man named George Floyd's neck until he passed away. And the world got to see 9 minutes and 46 seconds of that just brutal police brutality, and the world protested. And so that officer is serving his sentence in prison for murder. And as a response, though, because that was not the first instance of racism in the United States of America, racism against African Americans in the United States. And so there was this racial reckoning. And as a part of the racial reckoning, the Shenandoah County School Board decided to remove the names of Confederate generals from two of their local schools. And so they renamed the schools Mountain View High School, and they renamed an elementary school Honey Run Elementary School. Now, because of the reversal, Mountain View High School will revert to its former name, which was Stonewall Jackson High School. And Honey Run Elementary School will go back to being Ashby-Lee Elementary School. And so the board approved this change by a 5-1 vote, with supporters saying the Confederate figures' names had been taken off the schools in 2020 in a knee-jerk reaction amid protests of George Floyd's murder by police. That is what supporters say. Students in opposition to this decision, one of them said, school board minutes from 1959 revealed that the decision to name our school after Stonewall Jackson was a product of massive resistance. And at the time, just as add a little context to what she's saying, Virginia leaders in 1959 were aggressively fighting racial integration of public schools in their state. And so choosing to name the school Stonewall Jackson High School was actually, if you really want to go there, it probably was more of a knee-jerk reaction. And so the student brought that to light during the meeting, and she went on to say the fact that this discussion is receiving a disproportionately vast amount of attention from the county deeply disappoints me and leads me to wonder whether we are operating in the interest of our students or the preservation of our parents' pride. Interesting. Now, there were a few students who supported the decision. One who said So this student was going from, is going from eighth grade to ninth grade, and they said, I would like to wear a name that I'm proud of. Not only do I want to have my FFA jacket say Stonewall as I enter high school, but I would also love to have my jerseys, which I wear all year round, say Stonewall. Now, I found that comment quite interesting because the student said that they wanted to wear a name they were proud of. And those of us who know a little bit about United States history understand that the Confederates were actually treasonous. Like, they revolted against the Union. They revolted against the country, and they lost. And so that's quite interesting that someone would say that they're proud of that. But nevertheless, that was the decision that was made. And I, you know, I always, when I see stories like that, it always makes me say, interesting, because it's sometimes it feels like the very people who are saying that certain people need to get over slavery and it's all in the past and everything like that, you know, these are the same people who are advocating for their ancestors to be remembered. And you know, it's like it's not a one-way street. If you want people to forget, first of all, you can't forget about history because it happened, and that's not a good idea, okay? But if you're so adamant about living in the present, then why are you reaching back into history? It's giving the vibe of it's okay for me, but never for you. And so I'm so glad I don't live in Shenandoah County. And if anyone listens to them in this in the future, they'll probably rejoice that I don't live there too. Moving on to what I am currently reading. I am currently reading Disarming Leviathan by Caleb E. Campbell. And Caleb E. Campbell is a pastor who has lived through the effects of when Christianity marries politics. And first off, before I go on, I want to give a major shout out to NetGalley because they afforded me the opportunity to read this book ahead of time. I'm still reading it. The book does not come out until July 2nd, but NetGalley allowed me to read it ahead of time. So major shout out to them. Thank you so much. But let's get back to what Caleb is talking about in this book. So he has lived through the effects of Christianity marrying religion. And he wrote this book because he believes that Christian nationalism is problematic in the United States. At least that's what I gather from what I read thus far. And he wants to encourage those fellow Christians who do not agree with what he believes to be an agenda of Christian nationalists to stand up. But you have, before you can just stand up, you have to understand what you're standing up against. And so that is why he wrote this book. He claims that, you know, Christians who are against nationalism and who really do have a heart for other believers who are tied up in this thing where Christianity marries religion and is just, you know, devoted to the right no matter what, or right wing, I should say, politics no matter what, he feels that, you know, that is a mission field. And I thought that was quite interesting, and I still do, to call those who are Christians a mission field. It made me kind of say, wow, it's really gotten that bad. It's gotten to that point. And maybe it has. I don't know. I'm not in you know, any significant position in the church world, and I'm not sad about that. But Pastor Caleb is, he's a pastor, so he's an authority on the whole thing. And the summary says that, you know, Christian nationalism is an established feature of the American landscape. Disarming Leviathan can help prepare us to confront it with compassion and hospitality and with the truth of the good news of Jesus. And this book is 208 pages. And like I said earlier, it comes out on July 2nd, 2024. I will leave the details in the show notes for those who are interested. And I will say just, I am about, let's see, I'm not that far along. I'm about 50 pages in. And I will say that this book is definitely written to Christians. So if you're not a Christian and, you know, you may not appreciate this book as much because it's not written to you. It's written to Christians. Now, if you are someone who, you know, is interested in Christian nationalism because you are into politics and you feel like, you know, it is affecting your life and you want to see like maybe the root of it, you may want to check this book out. I feel like Caleb has done some research. He's done some due diligence, and I don't feel like it's the, you know, all encompassing foundation of it or the history of it. But I do feel like, you know, he's done enough research to be a voice on the subject and for a voice for even outsiders. So, or I won't say outsiders, but those who are not Christian, you could get something from this if you're just doing research on Christian nationalism in the country. And I do want to say, though, if you yourself are a Christian nationalist and you are firmly in belief that, you know, Christianity should be married to politics, I've heard this buzz phrase that it's not political, it's spiritual. I don't mean to put a jab in that, but that is like a phrase that I keep hearing. If you are one who believes that, you may just want to skip this book because this book is going to, it may offend you. It may offend you. And if you want to be offended, then by all means, check out the show notes and buy the book and read it, or, you know, check it out from the library when it comes out on the 2nd. But if you are like, no, what I believe is what I believe, I don't even want to listen to what this man has to say, just skip this one. Okay. But that is Disarming Leviathan by Caleb E. Campbell. And it's what I'm reading right now. Speaking of reading, if you noticed, okay, I've not taken any breaks. This is the new format. So I do want you to tell me what you think about this. Just going straight through. I honestly kind of like this a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. I can appreciate this. But let's move on to book review. So the book review for today is The Fiction Writer by Jillian Cantor. And let me tell you this. Oh my goodness. This book. When I saw this book in the LA County Library in Marina Del Rey, shout out to the LA County Library for providing us with amazing books. This was not one of the amazing books, though. I just want to point that out. But when I saw this book at the Marina Del Rey Library, first of all, it was on the new book section. It was in the new book section, and it popped out to me because, first of all, the name of the book, The Fiction Writer, and it's in the fiction section. And I was like, whoa, interesting. And also the picture or the photo on the cover was intriguing because it featured a home that was off the ocean. It was a glass home, or it's a glass home, I should say. And it was just kind of giving mysterious vibe before I even, you know, read what the book was about and the setting. Like, just from looking at that cover and being an LA native, I was like, this book is based in Malibu. I was so right. But, you know, things like that. Malibu, for those who don't know, is definitely like billionaire city at this point. Like, if you live in Malibu, you are at minimum a multi-millionaire. But a whole lot of billionaires live there. Us common folk, some of us don't even venture over there because for what purpose? And so I'm one of those people. You're not going to catch me in Malibu. I don't have any business out in Malibu. Literally don't have any business out there. And so, nevertheless, I like to read about things like that. You know, it's mystery. It's these people who are in power and what are they doing behind closed doors? And I thought that's what this book was going to be about. And it is, to a certain degree, because Olivia Fitzgerald is the main character, and she is down on her luck after she has written a book called Becky and it was a total flop. And her agent calls her one day and says, you know, I have this gig for you, but you have to go from Boston to Malibu to fulfill it, and it will pay you $50,000, and it could be a really good way for you to, you know, jumpstart your restart your career, because it's dying out right now if it's not dead already. And so Olivia agrees, because, you know, it's kind of like anything to get my career going. And honestly, because she needed the money, because she has bills. Okay, let's just be real, $50,000 is not what it used to be, but it is something. It is a significant bit of something. And so you know, you have this person who flies out, and she finds out that Ash Asherwood is the person that she will work for, and he wants her to write about his grandma, who he believes was her story was stolen. And the author of Rebecca, by the way, is an actual classic. So that was one thing that was good that came out of this book, is that I found out that, hey, there's a book out there that I can read, and I will be reading that one. But in the book that Jillian Cantor has written, Rebecca is a stolen tale, and Asherwood believes it was stolen from his grandma. It was his grandma's story, and the author of Rebecca stole it and passed it off as her own, or like it was her idea. And so he wants Olivia to, you know, do her due diligence, do her research, find out, and you know, bring justice to his grandma's name. And so Olivia sets out to do that, and that's what the $50,000 would be for. And Olivia sets out to do that, and that's not even all that it's cracked up to be. You have to read the book to find out how twisted it is. But she sets up to do that, and in the end, she finds out that everything was kind of a lie. And you know, Ash brought her out there because he believes that she is the thief. And does he even really believe that? Or did he just bring her out there to make his, you know, get his name in the press? There's all these questions in the end, but the thing that comes out of it that is surefire is Olivia reconnects with a college sweetheart named Noah, and they kind of live happily ever after. So that's pretty cool. But So I know what Jillian was trying to do with this book. And I will say, I gave it 2 stars on Goodreads because the writing itself was good, or is good. The plot is solid. I didn't say it was interesting. I said it was solid, meaning that Jillian has put out, this is point A, B, C, and whatever, and she does a great job with executing what she sets out to do. So for that, 2 stars, because that means that she's a great writer. This book and storyline itself, though, really fell flat for me, because I was like, whoa. Every time I thought something interesting was going to happen, it didn't happen. Every time I thought, oh, here we go, no. Even down to the end, the revelation was a shocker, but it was not like a clutch pearls. It was not something where, you know, we worked up to all of this and it just kind of turned into like a love story in the end. And it was like, really? This was a lot of labor just for this thing to turn out like this. And then as well, like, I was reminded at the end, near the end of the story, that Olivia was only living in Ash's house for a week. Honey, it felt like they had lived there for a lifetime. That's how much the story dragged, okay? And it just did not work for me. It didn't work for me. I would recommend this book to individuals if you enjoy slow reads, slow burns. The fiction writer could be interesting for you. If you're someone like me who really enjoys page turners, and you know, I'll even put up with something that's not a full-on page turner, but it does have to have some action at some point, you may want to skip this book entirely, because you will not be fulfilled. This book hurt my feelings. I'm kind of annoyed. I'm still annoyed. I'm still upset. I'm very grateful that I did not purchase this book. But I don't mean to, like, I am going to quote Maxine Waters. I would like to reclaim my time a little bit, because it was just laborious. I read through other books. Like, I put this book down because that's how it just did not interest me. And because I'm someone who really does believe that, you know, we should make efforts to finish what we start, and I really do not appreciate DNF in a book, I was like, I'm just gonna stick it out. I'm gonna tough it out. Oh, and it was tough. And so, like I said, if you're someone who really appreciates like slow reads, slow burns, the fiction writer may work for you. The chapters are short, so that's definitely a plus. The writing is amazing. I want to say that again. The writing is superb. It just didn't work for me. If you are someone like me, you may want to skip this book entirely. And last but not least on the roster, we are coming up on 21 minutes. I think this format works perfectly. So thank you, Soundtrap, for giving me grief because you gave me something new. Film and television. You know, I've been trying to get into these films and these television shows. And Baby Reindeer, I checked my, what's the name of this app? Let me pull it up. It's Letterboxd. So if you are on Letterboxd, come and hang out with me on Letterboxd. Be my friend. I really don't know how it works, but I'm on Letterboxd, and it's you have to look under Suri and Film. You have to look under that. But I came across this television series called Baby Reindeer, and I added it to my Maypix list on the app. And it is about a struggling comedian who shows one act of kindness to a vulnerable woman, and this sparks a suffocating obsession which threatens to wreck both their lives. Now, this is a series on Netflix that stars Richard Gadd, who is the star of the series, Jessica Gunning, and Nava Mal, among others. And so the interesting part about this book is that it's actually based on true events that happened to the star of the show. Richard Gadd was the victim of stalking in real life, and he recently as a matter of fact, the person who stalked him allegedly has, I think, filed a lawsuit against him after this series came out, although they worked overtime to ensure that her identity was not put out there in the public. But she allegedly has filed a lawsuit, and so that will be quite interesting. And I found that to be quite interesting. Something unique, because he is playing the character that was him in real life, and it's just like, whoa. You want to talk about passion? That's probably why this show is so wildly successful, because you already know, like, he puts passion into it because this happened to him. And he probably like pushes his co-stars to, you know, have the same drive. And so, in any case, Gadd recently talked with the press about the success of the series, and he said that he was actually shocked that people caught on and that they're appreciating the artistry that is Baby Reindeer. And he said, I never expected it to sort of blow up like this. This was an interview that Gadd had with the Daily Record newspaper. He went on to say, I believed it would be successful, but I didn't expect overnight. And then he goes on to say, I don't even like to use this word, but I didn't expect overnight fame. And it is indeed famous because on Letterboxd alone, this show has 4.1 in the rating sphere, and 80,000 people have reviewed, with one saying, all I can say is that this is without doubt one of the boldest, most courageous things I've ever seen. Brutally honest and empathetic. Staggering level of vulnerability. And another says, it's very rare that I see sexual violence against men, male sexual trauma treated with the seriousness it warrants. Raw, profound, vulnerable, and heartbreaking. Richard Gadd playing himself in this story based on true events from his life makes one of the most devastatingly pure and deep performances I have ever seen. And someone else says, you know, unbelievable story. And it just goes on like that. And so I have not watched this series. I am trying to get into film and television, because that too is artistry, and you have to, you know, there's reading involved in that too. There's reading involved in everything. So I'm going to try to check out the series, but by all means, check out the series. Come be my friend on Letterboxd. Come be my friend on Goodreads. Come be my friend on Instagram. Come be my friend on YouTube. Well, I guess there's not a lot of friendship on YouTube. You know, hang out with me on Book Talk or whatever some of you kids call it TikTok. The kids call it TikTok. But let's all find something to read. Let's all find ways to be productive and to appreciate and uplift one another. I will see you all next weekend for another episode of Ceree Reads. And I think I'm going to keep this format. Bye.